I have a question here on soulmates. Is this concept of soulmate true? If all there is consciousness, then everyone is your soulmate in that sense. If everyone is an instrument of God, of the source, of the divine, then everyone is your soulmate. The deep realization of this means there is no fragmentation where some are considered soulmates and others are not. Yes, there may be certain relationships in one's journey of life which operate out of Rinanubandhan, karmic bonds deep in nature. But the whole path of Jnana Yoga is to get out of the bandhan, out of the bondage of relationships, the bondage in which it is assumed everyone is a doer of their actions, me or the other. And once that understanding happens, that no one truly does anything, then there's very little distinction left between friends and enemies. And the unicity is seen. So it's a very abstract term. Does one have a soulmate, etc.? There's a lot of new age concepts around it, but this is the path of jnana and understanding. But we want that special one. I must tell you, about 10, 15 years ago, I met a Gujarati lady, much younger than me, extremely clairvoyant, and we were having a casual discussion. And she said, "Gautam ji, I tell people who come to me that your spouse cannot be your soulmate, and they get very upset." She said, "I know they cannot because the relationship with the spouse is a karmic relationship." But people get upset because we are all looking for that special one. If you ask me, if you are fortunate enough, your soulmate is your guru, whether in the body or no more. Why? Because the guru is God in human form. I am not saying this. Ramana has said this. Maharaj has said this. The guru is God consciousness in human form. That is the pure relationship, the purest of pure. Why? Because the guru's love is unconditional. Thank you for that question. I find it difficult to reconcile with the fact that everything is happening as per God's will, seeing my own shortcomings and the issues with the world. Is God not omnipotent? You see, this is the limitation of our thinking mind. We start questioning God's omnipotence. But our view is so narrow. And more importantly, we ourselves are a created object in the manifestation, and we are questioning the rest of the manifestation. As if we are separate from it. That is the Maya. To question, is God not omnipotent? How can he do such things? And more so, as Rameshji would say, a painting can never know why its painter painted it. Can a created object know the will of the creator? That is the Maya. Siddhant has asked, I hope it's okay to read out people's names because it makes it more intimate, but if you all feel that it's not appropriate, do let me know. I find myself getting quite agitated around hyperactive minds. How does one stay grounded amidst oneself? It's a beautiful question. It appears very simple, but it also shows certain stages in the spiritual journey. One is certainly, if one is surrounded by agitated minds, one would tend to be agitated. If one is thrown into a pot of boiling water, one will also boil. So if there's a vibration of disturbance around, it can impact one's own vibration. And that is why the preference is to be around peaceful people. The preference is to go to sages, be in their company, sit with the wise ones, read their books. But now let's look at it at a slightly deeper level. If one is established in peace, if one is established in the knowing that no one truly does anything, me or the other, if one is established in knowing that all this agitation is a function of the mind, the thinking mind and personality, with each one bringing their own unique mix to the equation. More importantly, all this is transient on the surface, creating waves, big and small, but doesn't really matter. The cliche of the water at the bottom of the ocean not being concerned with what's happening with the waves at the top is referring to the depth of peace one feels within. Then all these surface activities of the mind and people's mind operate only at the surface level. They don't shake you from the depth of your being. It then does not matter to you anymore. So next time you feel disturbed, if there are agitated people around you, let the understanding operate, give it space. That the disturbance is only at the level of the thinking mind. Who is the one who is aware? Who is the one who is aware that I am disturbed when I am in the company of people who get agitated? Who is that? Will that stand up? That which is agitated in you because of being with others who are agitated, who are around you, will that please leave the room? John has asked a very pertinent question. Are you not bothered by death? One day you'll never hear a song again or eat food. You can beat around the bush all you want, but without experiencing awareness is nothing. It has no beauty. Yes, in one sense, that is the gift of life. A beautiful landscape one is looking at, a beautiful song one is hearing, looking at a baby, These are only possible when one is in the waking state as identified consciousness. And of course, all this will be missed. Of course, the me will regret that, wow, I will, once I am dead, all this is gone. Most certainly, that is the gift of not just awareness, but experiencing. But yet, what about the gift of deep sleep? Where is that one in deep sleep when it comes to the songs one has heard, which one likes, or the beautiful sunset that one has seen? And that is why Ramana Maharshi has said, deep sleep is your natural state. I am always rooted in the past, especially the good moments. They keep coming back. Whatever I do, I want it to be like old times. Don't we all? But that is the suffering. The past is gone. But the experience of what made me feel good in the past is what I want to repeat. That is the suffering. God has not given you any guarantees about the future, which is your own experience, and therefore you have comfort in your past experiences. I felt great when this happened, when I was young. When that happened, oh, if life could be like that, that is the suffering. Because life has shown you that even those good times didn't last. So you derived your happiness from something transient. Fleeting, passing by, like everyone does. But then the realization dawns that if none of that can give me lasting happiness, true happiness, then what is it that would give me true happiness, which does not depend on something good happening to me? And then one realizes that true happiness is nothing but peace of mind. That is the start of the spiritual journey. So your happiness is no longer going to depend on something good happening to me. Because you know that that is temporary. Then the journey begins. So I would like to end this with about 5 minutes of just sitting in silence. You may call it meditation, you may call it witnessing, or you may call it a waste of time, in which case you can simply go off the live stream. But if these 5 minutes are just spent in being, not in trying to stop thoughts and thinking from happening, but witnessing whatever thoughts arise, let them arise. Even if your mind goes astray, let it go astray. Just let things be. You may close your eyes, you may look at me on the screen, whatever you're comfortable with. But we can just end on this note of silence for 5 minutes.